Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the May 23 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Merrill Crowley of Midwest Market Solutions out of Watseka, Illinois, Elaine Cubb, author of Mastering the Grain Markets out of Roscoe, South Dakota, John Newton of the American Farm Bureau of Washington, D.C., and Mike Zuzlo at globalanalytics.biz in Atchison, Kansas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. John Newton, I think I'll start with you. I'd like you to discuss AFBF's perspective of the USDA trade aid package that was released on Thursday morning.
Well, I think, you know, the rumors have been out there for more than a week now on what the potential trade aid package would look like ever since the president tweeted something a couple weeks ago. What our folks were really interested in is that whatever the package that was ultimately unveiled is that it wouldn't distort the planting intentions that are underway as we speak. We know that the pace of planting this year in both corn and soybeans is record slow, and so we wanted to make sure that whatever was announced didn't change the intentions of growers over the next few weeks on what they were going to plant.
Mike Zuzlo or others, do you have questions, Mike, you want to ask?
Yeah, I was going to ask, John, thanks for joining us. What a timely time for you to be on. We really appreciate it. Do you think that the crop insurance industry and, you know, the FSA, and my understanding by reading the press release by USDA, and maybe that's where we start, is that if you're out here in the Missouri River bottoms and you're just not going to get planted, period, for a variety of reasons, you will not be accepted into this program as it sits right now. If that's the case, do you think that the FSA and the crop insurance industry and the USDA overall with this plan are going to have to massage this, or is this what it's going to be and then we're just going to have to rely upon catastrophic payments, or can you give us any light on that?
You know, I think, you know, as with everybody, you're kind of processing what USDA had in their press release, what they announced on the stakeholders call, and what they announced on the media call. And on the call this morning, it was pretty clear that prevent plant, or if you did not plant a crop, that you wouldn't be eligible for the market facilitation payment round two. And I think one of the things that is telling about this is we're trying to do a disaster package right now in Washington, D.C. for growers that have been impacted by the flooding, the hurricanes in the southeast, volcanoes, wildfires, et cetera. But one of the key elements of that disaster package is a fix to the first market facilitation program payment last year that would make prevented planting eligible for a trade aid payment and would also make some calculations on that with respect to the adjusted gross income limitation. So I think we're starting to see some precedents from Capitol Hill on what these trade aid payments should do. So it'd be our hope that maybe we could meet with USDA to talk about this and maybe get prevented planted covered.
So why is it not allowed?
Well, there's no law on the trade aid payments. You know, the president and USDA have directed USDA to deliver these trade aid payments to growers. The thought, at least at this point, is that prevented plant would not be eligible for a trade aid payment because the crop wasn't grown. But I think it's important for folks to understand when you're setting those crop insurance guarantees and when you think about a prevent plant payment, the return that you're going to get from prevent plant is impacted by the trade headwinds we've seen. The crop insurance price on soybeans this year was lower as a direct result of the trade aid. So if you delay or can't plant and you qualify for a prevent plant payment, your benefits lower because of the trade headwinds. I think that's a real important designation that we need to clarify to the department.
The July 15 deadline, John, it looks like that's going to be where the first tranche comes in. Is that so that FSA can certify acres? And then am I reading the press release correctly that the second and third tranches are really going to be dependent upon whether we get a trade deal or not with China specifically. But I also heard Turkey and the European Union was brought into the mix on some commentary. Can you maybe provide some reality on some of that stuff as well?
You know, I think reality is important to keep in mind when you're thinking about this. The last time we did this last year, you know, there was talk of two tranches of payments. And then when we got around to the second tranche, there was some hesitation on that we wouldn't get the second round of payment. The reality on the ground is that folks were walking to their bankers with that second payment already penciled into their balance sheet. And if we wouldn't have gotten that second payment, we would have been in some really tough shape across farm country. So the fact that they've broken it out across three payment horizons and said if necessary really adds another level of uncertainty for farmers at a time, you know, in January when they're going to have to be working with their lenders on their 2020 planning. So I think our folks are going to, you know, try to convince and work with the administration that, look, we need certainty. We need to get some deals done. We need USMCA across the finish line. We need to start talking to Japan. We need ag as part of the EU agreement. Oh, and by the way, give us some money so we can go knock on some doors and find some customers other than China.
Anybody else?
Well, I think it would be interesting to discuss what would the other customers besides China be for soybeans in particular. And do you anticipate, you know, the knock-on effects 5 years down the road or 10 years down the road of us not being able to recapture the market share that Brazil has come in and taken away or deserved or earned here in 2019?
I mean, you're raising, a million-dollar question. You know, who are the other customers for soybeans? When they buy 60% of the world's soybeans as it is, everybody's got all their eggs in one basket. What they did to the Canadians on canola is a perfect example of how they can immediately close the door. China's going to have some issues with African swine fever. They're not going to be the player in soybeans that they were. But we have an opportunity every single year to recalibrate and adjust our resources. So maybe the question is, do we need 30 million acres of soybeans to meet the Chinese demand, or can we diversify into some other crops? And I think that's what, you know, farmers have always proved their ingenuity, and they've responded to market signals, and that's what we're going to have to see moving forward.
Was USMCA included in this process? Because it sure looked like that might be the case for the livestock side.
Well, on USMCA, look, we've gotten the 232 retaliatory tariffs removed for Canada and Mexico. So the opportunity on USMCA is to try to get something. Hopefully the president can work with, you know, House Leader Pelosi, to get something across the finish line. But the headwinds we face going into Canada and Mexico are a lot lighter today than what they were a week ago. So I think a lot of this really is on China. And I think the reason why they included all those different crops, you know, noteworthy that all of these crops, except for alfalfa on the crop side, are Title I covered commodities. So I think they included it all in order to make sure that we can get a balanced payment out to farmers that hopefully wouldn't impact planting decisions by covering all those different covered commodities.
Now let's turn our attention to the marketplace. I think I'll bring you into the conversation here, Merrill. Old crop corn, producers have a lot yet to market. I don't know whether this adds more certainty, less certainty, more urgency to market that crop. What's your opinion?
Well, I think the market's trying to tell you right here and now for the help for the tariff aid. Corn down 5, beans down 8, and we don't really have any changes in the weather. But I would say the trade is looking at this from the standpoint that farmers are going to even be more likely to try to mud stuff in. In the long run, I don't see how that's going to help out. Because then you're going to start losing on yield. So it's tough because we've already had the frustrations with the rains, the frustrations of deciding whether or not we're going to go preventative plant, and now we throw in a third frustration. It's just going to be something we're going to have to slowly work through, and all I see is a bigger mess.
Elaine, there in Roscoe, South Dakota, and maybe you can explain where that is. I'm thinking that producers probably are under a lot of pressure, and I can't imagine that they're thinking they're going to plant at all.
That's correct. Right in my little neck of the woods, I farm here, and some of my neighbors do have some corn in. But if you go farther south and east to the really high corn yielding areas of South Dakota, they are as waterlogged as northwestern Iowa. So and with more rain in the forecast, it's nothing. And I would just like to emphasize that as the decision making part of this. So I'm already economically motivated as much as I can be to get something planted rather than to take a prevented planting or take the money from my insurance policy, because that's not as good, or that's not as good as an alternative as just what I could receive from the market, hopefully. So just to go back, and I know we're talking this topic into the ground about this market facilitation program, but whatever the market facilitation program does, that doesn't motivate me one way or the other. I'm already motivated to get something planted, whether or not I can get a market facilitation program payment or not. So I just, it's extremely frustrating, as Merrill said. If you can't get those bushels in, and then on top of that, you will be skunked out of the MFP payment, that is certainly an additional layer of frustration.
Well, let's hope you don't get skunked out of that. I know that our folks across the country have been calling in, hoping that folks don't get skunked out if you can't get it in the ground.
Thank you.
So the reason being that you're at 70 or 75% crop insurance coverage? Because in Iowa and Illinois, at 80 or 85%, the payment probably, especially if you haven't gotten anything on, clearly is going to push towards prevent plant.
Not necessarily, no. You receive 55% of your covered amount. So if it's 75% or 85%, it sort of depends on what your land costs are, what your sunk costs are. If you already have fertilizer in the ground, 55% may or may not make you whole. Your better chance is to grow the bushels and try and put them onto the market at hopefully a 450 level. We can hope so if everybody else gets, prevented planted out of this.
I agree 100%.
And it's really this eternal game of farmers, right? You always hope that somebody else has the bad thing happen to them and the prices go up, and that's going to be your best option.
I think it's certainly setting up to be that way, because if you mount them in, you're going to cut your yield. And so you could be looking at a situation similar to what 1993, the reduction, 1974, I think there was a 22 bushel per acre reduction from the planting to the harvest. With that in mind, then you're looking at possibly getting a better price for your grain and get the market facilitation payment.
Before today in the state of Illinois, and there were, I don't know how many people, and I think this was in East Central Illinois, maybe someplace, I saw that picture, but farmers in this part of the world had done the numbers, and they had already picked the date when they would stop planting. They were going to take prevent plant, and now they have to make a different decision.
I would agree with that. I've been trying to sit here figuring out what particular price would keep them from doing prevent plant. Well, now you can lower that price. It would, say, and I'm just going to throw out a number from, let's say, 480 cash on the board, cash in the elevator would keep you from doing prevent plant. Well, now you can lower that price and take market facilitation payments.
And it also changes your math for deciding whether to take the prevent plant or to replant into soybeans, right? There was a date, or you could have your corn yields versus what you might be able to get from soybeans instead of 55% of your corn guarantee. Now that what you might be able to get from soybeans changes completely if you're getting a per bushel payment from the government.
So it's tying to the 2019 acres that is the big problem with the package as it's presented, because producers have to make a decision about whether to plant or not to plant, and they don't have enough information about what the financials look like.
Well, I think they have enough information. They just don't have control over the one deciding factor is the weather. You're not able to make this decision based on the economics of it. You're only able to make the decision based on what you physically can do, and lots of us cannot do it.
I think what Elaine said was, look, you can't play the game, Todd, if you don't have the bushels. And a lot of signs are pointing to playing the game at a price a little bit higher than where we're at today. Would you say 450, 480? If we're playing ball at that level, I'd much rather have grain in the bin than a prevent plant payment.
Zuzalo, you've been quiet.
Amen.
Yeah, I've just been taking it in. I think two things, the ratio between the beans and the corn, this market facilitation program as it sits right now, and Mother Nature would all suggest that corn is still a better commodity than beans in the long haul. And then you throw on top of that what John brought up about the African swine fever. We're still curbing demand in soybeans to a degree we don't even know at this point on a global scale. So, I mean, I'm still in the mindset that if we can get beans to rally with corn and wheat on continued wet weather, which is what I would expect, if we came back from the Memorial Day holiday wet, we'd see both, all three of them rally together. And I think this new facilitation program helps that, because when the Bloomberg story leaked, it was $2 on beans and it was easy for producers. I mean, I had probably half a dozen calls that day and crop insurance people telling me it's going to be easy for the farmers to check out of corn and jump into beans in terms of bigger acres on beans. Now that is wiped away more because of this new program. So my sense is if we can get a 30 to 45 cent rally in the beans from the tailwind of wheat and corn continuing higher, on the idea that we're going from 92.8 million corn acres below 90 million acres because we're wet another 7 to 10 days. I think it's a really good idea to get some puts bought. And I think it's a really good idea. John brought this up about the market, the first market facilitation program. How much of that money did we spend on buying puts and beans? And I would argue probably none. And I think we really got to get a floor underneath us this time around and use some of that facilitation money to do so, so that we don't have to worry about what African swine fever does to us if we do have normal soybean yields thanks to Xtend beans and thanks to the genetics.
So what do we think Prevent Plant Acres will look like as of today and across the whole of the nation? Maybe I can start with you out in South Dakota.
Yeah, I did some math on this. I did some math a couple of weeks ago, just assuming that folks would work as hard as they can all night and all day, and that there would be some dry pockets. And I still came up with a number of like 33 million acres of corn unplanted as of Memorial Day. But the decisions don't end on Memorial Day. And so don't use the 33 million acres number in any math that you do, because people will still be motivated to keep planting into June. I think even of corn, even though Merrill, you know, as Merrill pointed out, there's yield drags on that. But the motivation is there. So I think I don't have a good number for you, but I'm going to put it somewhere between 3 and 33 million acres.
There you go. I was looking at this from a little different viewpoint. I always get, I guess, kind of crazy. And I got two crazies while I'm at it. The first one is we got 19% completed last week. And if we can continue to do that under the conditions we keep having, and I don't know if that's possible or not, but June 6th, we'd be done. Well, we'd be up to 96% planted. And that still leaves us about 4% shy. And again, I don't know if we're going to be able to continue that 19% per week or not. And if we could do that, then I think corn would get put in the ground. And I would even say that they probably could go to June 15th. And it's just all going to depend on how much money we're going to see. The other thing I keep hearing, and I understand why we're hearing it, but I also have to question it to someone, and that is we keep hearing demand destruction because of losing the hogs. Well, we got to feed these people something. We got to feed them chickens or cattle or fish. And if you got a fish farm, you're putting meal out there, you're putting corn out there, you got chickens, you're putting meal and corn in them. And there's got to be a point here where this demand destruction is going to slow down. So I think continually looking at it as a consistent decline in usage isn't quite correct.
Well, I'll take that one on, Merrill, since that was a comment that I made. I hope you're right. I'll still buy my puts because I'm a risk manager, and I can tell you that
there's nothing wrong with buying inputs, Mike. That was a good statement, and I didn't mean to attack that at all. And I really didn't mean to attack you with this. At some point, don't we have to start feeding enough other livestock to make up to feed these people?
Yeah, I think you're 100% right. It's a lag, though, typically, and so that's what I'm worried about. But thank you for clarifying that. The The only thing I'd say, Todd, about the acres is, you know, 93 is our only barometer right now in this modern era. And between May and December, we went from, I think, 76.5 million acres corn to 73.7. It's a 3.7% decline. That takes you below the 80. That takes you to about 89.5 million, translating that into USDA's way too high acreage base from, you know, 3 months ago. So I think it's fair to assume that it's going to be hard to get above 91 million acres at this point, and that we could go below 90 million in the next 10 to 15 days if both these weather models continue to portray what they're portraying. I mean, people in Rochelle, Illinois, told me today they haven't turned a wheel since April 25th, and it's just absolutely historic what we're going through at this point, even worse than 93 as I remember it, because I think in 93 we at least got something done in the springtime. And, you know, other people have brought up 2013. Well, 2012 was the drought. We had so much work done in late 2012 and early 2013. Then this goes back to some of the issues that we talked about earlier. There's a lot more producers I'm talking to right now that don't have the chemicals and fertilizer anymore in the ground. It's been leached out. And so they are wide open to planting beans because they know their yield's going to be hit hard on corn at this stage. So I think it's fair to say 91 million and no better than a 174 yield at this stage of the game. And that takes you to a level that, you know, would support the corn in the cash market going into harvest.
John Newton at AFBF as their chief ag economist. Do you have some numbers?
I look back and this goes back, you know, Todd, to Farm Doc for Life. When I was on the Farm Doc squad over there, we looked at prevent plant numbers. And back in 2013, we had total corn and soybean prevent planted acres at about 5 to 6 million acres. I think it's easily possible to hit those numbers. Folks rushing to get corn in the ground could potentially not be able to get soy in the ground. I think you still need, some sort of weather event to not, you know, to get a prevent plant on soybeans. But I think I'd modify my number. I'd say anywhere between 6 and 33 million acres.
John, why do you think? It took me a second to catch that. John, why do you think that the CME Group futures have not rallied?
I think they've rallied, in my opinion, I think they've rallied quite a bit. It's been quite a roller coaster the last 2.5 weeks. The spring corn price was $4 a bushel. I don't know the numbers, but the folks on the phone do. I believe new crop corn has fallen to as low as 350, 360, and what's it today, 412, 413? So that's a pretty sharp rally. I think the other factor to consider, and again, I'm not an expert on this, but aren't the funds like record short in the corn market? They're going to need to unload that as these planting delays continue to probably scare them. And I think there's more rallies ahead of us.
I couldn't agree more. I think that as soon as the market sees inflation in the outside markets, those same hedge funds that were record net short could become record net long. I'm not sure that they would do it on the supply side issues and weather, because they tend to sell into weather markets. But if they see the dollar turning weaker and the gold turning stronger, I think they could really pick up a net long position relatively quickly.
I think that where RJO was saying we had still short 140,000, where they were 300 and some thousand short. I think that's a little bit too light. I think they probably have sold more because we've seen more cash sold into the market. But it's still going to take at least, 100,000 contracts to take us back to just zero. And then if they decide to go long.
So we'll get our final word in just a moment. But I think from our brokers, I'd like to get some new crop advice. Mike Zuzulo, let's start with you.
I guess the biggest thing is going back to the puts and the beans and giving the market a chance to give us a little bit better price action in the corn. I think that the fact that the spreads widened this week in corn suggests that, you know, the shutdown of the Mississippi River again in St. Louis is probably going to be a negative feature we're going to have to keep our eye on. So I do think that as you get to 430, 445 December corn, you want to get some floors underneath you in the corn market. I think the other thing too is I've taken a couple calls this week from producers that have done some of the commercial elevator contracts that are pre-programmed, and you probably want to check on those and see where your production level is versus what you've locked in at this point in time, because that's probably something you'll want to, you know, try and keep in touch with.
Yeah, and to follow up with what Mike just said there, I don't know, and we talked about it earlier about this run-up that we've had in corn is probably at least somewhat tied to the speculators all of a sudden covering their previous short positions. Now, I don't know to what degree farmers or bona fide hedgers, producer types, are in the futures market suddenly covering shorts and perhaps going long or taking their coverage off, if that has contributed to the rally that we've had in the past couple of weeks. But I hope that is not the case, because I think it would be important to maintain what sales you do have at the elevator and have coverage, because, you know, if it's 6 million acres and not 33 million acres that goes to prevented planting, you're still talking about pretty comfortable stocks to use ratios, all things being equal. And we might not be as bullish as people might immediately feel like as we talk today.
And Merrill Crowley, your thoughts there, and maybe you can give us a final word too.
As far as getting new crop, I suppose if you wanted to say safest, the puts are probably the safest. It wouldn't hurt to be placing some cash sales. Mike has a good starting point around the 430 to 440 area, maybe 450. We have yet to see how far this market's going to be pushed. As far as the final comments, I understand the frustration that's out there. We've been talking to different guys and trying to work all through this, and it's now we got a new set of numbers to start working on. And all I can say is, you know, stick with it, work through your numbers, because it's really important to know where your numbers are. And I'd say this year it's even more important than it has been in the past.
Just to dovetail with what Merrill just talked about, we really do have data-dominated funds, and we've seen that this spring. I mean, the analysis that I try to put forth with clients and subscribers was that data matters, and we think USDA matters as far as what data the funds look at. And we've seen this in the crop progress report, and especially the acreage report, and especially the last supply-demand report. So if we would start to see the USDA data and some of this crop data turn more favorable and be more like it was before 2014, 2015. Don't think the funds won't react to that. They can be positive as much as they can be negative on prices. So be watching for that, and be watching for the inflationary push. Be watching for the major commodity indices to start to go above long-term resistance levels and put buy signals in on stochastics and turn favorable on momentum. Not saying it's going to happen, but we have some stars aligning that maybe will come together that will allow us to get to that point.
Elaine Cubb?
Well, call your senators about the MFP program. That's my final word.
And John Newton.
Sure, because I got to go pick my daughter up from school, so why not? I think, like the guy said on the phone, look, sprinkle in some puts here. There's pricing opportunities. You don't got to do it all at once. Be proactive. Manage your risk. And when there's a black swan event like we're having today, that we've been having, take advantage of it and be proactive, manage your risk. I think that's the best strategy of all. You should be managing risk every single year. There's way too much debt that farmers are taking on to put a crop in the ground, and to be exposed to the cash market is a poor decision given how volatile these markets can be.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may listen to the whole of this program anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Merrill Crowley of Midwest Market Solutions. He's out of Watseka, Illinois. Elaine Cubb, the author of Mastering the Grain Markets, from Roscoe, South Dakota. From Washington, D.C., John Newton from the American Farm Bureau. And Mike Zuzolo at globalanalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.